If you're joining me this Thursday morning on the Playbook, as you should be, we can't wait for the NBA draft. And I have head coach Alvin Gentry. And we discuss not only the patience and the progress of your profession, but more importantly, how and why to trust your employees and your best players. It's going to be an exciting day in the NBA. Come join head coach of the Pelicans, Alvin Gentry, and me for all of this and more.
This is Entrepreneurs The Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success and what made them champions on the field and in the boardroom. I'm your host and CEO of Sports One Marketing, David Meltzer.
This is Dave Meltzer with Entrepreneur The Playbook, and I am so excited to have my first head coach of an NBA team, Alvin Gentry, head coach of the Pelicans.
Very nice to see you.
Thanks for having us. Yeah. Well, your career, you know, a lot of people want to be a head coach of a team, and you just went gangbusters, and I'll get to last season, 2018, but to get there, as I'm looking through your career, you were always kind of one degree away from being, like, even when you played in college, you went to Appalachian State, right, which is a 1AA school.
Yeah.
Right? And then
at the time,
yeah. Yeah. And but you have this belief in yourself, I think, that allowed you for 20 years to just consistently stay on your path. Where did that come from, that ability to see past, you know, the result?
Well, I think from my dad, number one. I mean, obviously, he's my hero. And I say that because, he was a factory worker, his whole life. 45 years he worked in the same factory. He went 11 straight years without missing one day of work. So, I kind of used that as my guide to everything. And he always said that, if you want something, you'll work hard enough to get it. And the old thing about with one door, when one door open, the other door, closes. One door closes, the other door open. And so he just said, if you want something, then just be resilient and stay after it.
Yeah, my dad always said, man, if they're going to throw you out the door, come back through the window. Right?
Exactly. Same thing along those lines. Exactly.
And you grew up with modest means. Yes. But one thing that I read about you is that you really had the perspective of, a loving childhood. You may not have had everything that you wanted, but you really treasured the relationship with your family.
I did, because I think there's so much emphasis put on material things that sometimes we lose sight of the things that's most important to us. Family is very important. I was raised by a mom and dad that was married for 63 years, and they always said that, if we have our family and we have love together, everything else is secondary. So I really, truly believe that. And I think that as long as you have a caring, like I had caring parents, and they were very driven, not very educated from that standpoint, but a wealth of knowledge from the standpoint of what it takes to be successful.
And you carried that over. I always say the assistant coach, most people don't know, especially, you were at Kansas with Coach Brown and championship teams, but then in the NBA, the assistant coaches really are the ones who have the closer family relationship with the players.
They do, because as a head coach, you're probably that tough dad, tough love. Whereas as an assistant, I know that I had a tendency to be a lot closer to the players, because I think you could talk to them along the lines of, hey, you just need to do better in these areas. Whereas in as a head coach and in my situation, I think you have to be a little more demanding. Obviously you got a couple of people at that position, and almost to the point where you say, if you cannot get the job done, then we have to try someone else.
Yeah, it's interesting. One of my favorite movies, Miracle on Ice. And yes. You can see the distinction between Coach Brooks and the assistant coach. Where did that communication, because you're kind of a middle management guy, you have to maintain two relationships. You got to have the players believing in you, trusting you. You're the conduit too, that you want to have them be open to you so that you can, message up to the boss,
right?
Hey, this is how he's feeling, or this is what I think. How did you handle that duality of having to maintain the player's trust, but also, you're really working for the head coach and want to make sure that you're carrying the message down to them as well?
Yeah, I think what you have to do is that, first of all, you got to establish trust. I think without trust, you're not going to get very far anyway. And I think once you establish trust, then the next thing you got to do is I think you got to be honest with them. You know, they can trust you, but if you're not honest with them, then I think that relationship is eventually is going to deteriorate. So I think you got to be honest with them in that you got to tell them things. And I always said to someone that confrontation is not always a bad thing. And so you have to be straight up, and I think you got to be honest and fair with players. And I think more so than anything, and especially in the NBA, more so than college, I find out that when you're straight up with a player and you're honest with them and you actually tell them things, and it may be it may be negative, but I think they're more acceptant of it if they know that you're being honest with them. And they look at this as a job also. I mean, this is a job, just like anything else. So if they have a way of improving themselves, and you're straight up and you tell them that, they'll work at it,
And, to that point, one of the highlights of your career is the national championship with Coach Brown in Kansas, and you spent a lot of time coaching in college.
I did 11 years.
What do you think the main difference is of motivating, a younger college athlete compared to the guys who it's a business, and especially today? I mean, the ninth player makes more money than we ever dreamed of.
that is correct. Yeah. It's a pretty good lifestyle.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind being the ninth player. Yeah. You live a lot longer.
Yeah, exactly. That's a really good question. I think, the main thing, the motivation in college is obviously everyone wants to get to the NBA. And so that in itself is a really good motivational tool that you can use with most of the players in college. I also think as far as hard work, you can use the NBA as a motivation simply because you can give them areas of improvement they have to make in order to get to that level, and they're going to work on it. I think the motivation in the NBA is that, once you've reached the mountaintop or the plateau of your career, as far as the aspirations of being in the highest level, then I think you want to try to be the best at that. And there's so many guys that's motivated, from making the league to being an all-star, to now trying to be on the all-pro team and seeing if you can chase the Michael Jordans and the LeBron James of the world to try to be the best, or the Kobe Bryants, and try to be the best player that there is.
Which is interesting because a lot of those goals are those individual ones, but yet I see a lot of players today, because they make so much money, that championship is the thing that is elusive, right? All those other things, you can't buy one.
No, you can't.
Right.
You
can't. Do you use that? I mean, you've had great success in the NBA. Do you use that as, the carrot that you're hanging out there to keep your team together?
I don't even know if you need to use that as a carrot because I think eventually what happens is that, guys have all these material things, and you've got the best car, and you live in the best house, and you wear the best clothes, and you've got the best bling or jewelry or whatever. And so what is the thing that you don't have? You don't have that championship. And I think what happens at some stage in a player's career, they realize that, to me, the only thing left is that championship, and I'm going to chase that championship, and that's what I want to have. And I want to be in a situation, because it is an unbelievable fraternity. We won it in 2015 in Golden State, and it's a situation where you will always be with that team. You will always be recognized with that team. You will always know that team. And I think it's a feeling that you can't buy. It's something that you can't purchase. It's something that has to be earned.
Which makes it even better for people who can afford whatever they want to actually achieve something that they can't buy. One of my favorite marketing campaigns was, how do you make a grown man cry? And then they show a guy with a championship ring and then they're just bawling, right?
Oh, yeah. And that's, and to me, that really is, when you think about it, achieving the ultimate goal in sports, a Super Bowl, a World Series title, NBA championship.
And NCAA championship.
Yeah, NCAA championship. You can see the emotions that are tied to that. If you go back and look and see LeBron James finally getting Cleveland over the hump.
I cried.
You know, yeah. and you know, it meant a lot to him, and especially being from that happening from his home team and from the state of Ohio. And
I was born in Akron, so.
Yeah, so there. Yeah,
yeah,
so
you can, I was there crying.
So I just think that you know, when you accomplish something at that level, and you can even look at the Tom Brady's of the world right now, and everyone remembers Michael and the way he held the championship trophy, because it really, really means something to reach that level.
And even as a coach, did you feel the same way? I know with Golden State you won.
You do feel the same way.
Yeah.
You know, the Golden State thing, we thought that we were good. You know, we didn't know if we were quite a championship team. So to accomplish it in that situation was unbelievable. At Kansas, you know, 2 years before, we had no doubt that we were the best team in the country. I think we ended up 34-3, lost to Duke in the Final Four, felt really good about it. The championship that we won in 88, we weren't really sure, you know, how good we really were. We came into the tournament 18-12 or something like that,
yeah.
And, you know, 18-11, I think, and we were just happy to be in the tournament, and we were going to see where it would take us. And, you know, all of a sudden you start to play well, and you play, you know, as a cohesive unit, and the chemistry is there. You win six games, and you become a championship team. And I think the only team that could really kind of relate to that is UConn. The year that they started out as the, I think they were the eighth seed, if I'm not mistaken,
yep.
in the Big East tournament. They played their way through that. They won four games in four nights. One of them was a four overtime game. They get into the tournament and play well, and they end up being champs. So a little bit different from the NBA than it is from the NCAA, because most of the time in the NBA, about 99% of the time, the best team is going to win.
That's amazing. And you said something that's interesting. You said, you know, kind of played our way through it. It wasn't statistically the best team that you ever coached that won the championship, but your career is kind of the same way. You know, you know, as an assistant coach, you're at the mercy of the ownership, but also the mercy of the head coach. You're either tied in, or then you're in a conflictual situation where you're replacing the head coach by chance. But do you kind of kept that, I'm just going to keep going, where I would look at the career since 1985,
yeah.
and the jobs keep changing and changing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know so many people in sports that would say, you know what, this isn't worth it.
Yeah.
But you ended up getting to the pinnacle.
Yeah, I think that what happens is that if you're going to be involved in this particular business, you've got to know that change is going to come. There's very few guys, you know, for every Greg Popovich who's been there for 23 years now, you know, there's 50 other guys, you know.
Yeah.
I think it would be interesting to see the number of coaches that have changed jobs since he's been at San Antonio. And I think they had that one time.
That
it was over 100.
Yeah.
So you can see that. And I think the one thing that you have to always remember, and the old thing you had to believe in, is that I always believed in myself, and I never took it personal. You know, someone decided to make a change, or you know, we decided to mutually part ways, which is the catchphrase now. I always felt like, well, you know, I'm going to continue because I think I'm good at this.
And you are. Now I'm going to take a shift in gears because there's an interesting thing with entrepreneurs. Education's changing. Education's changing for the game of basketball as well. You know, there's all these varying, you know, even Coach K, who swore that there would never be one and done players from Duke. He wouldn't even recruit them. He wants to win, and he has to take talent.
Exactly.
And the same thing with entrepreneurs. The hardest advice that I give, because I come from a family, you know, single mom, six kids, and it was doctor, lawyer, or failure. And now people look up to me as an entrepreneur saying, hey, do I got to go to college? You know, do I have to, you know, should I drop out of college? Because, you know, I have this whole business and, you know, I can do really well. Well, that's actually what kids are saying today in sports is, hey, I have the skills, I have the knowledge, I have the desire. Is it a good thing that I stay here and develop, you know, specifically towards an education? What advice would you give a young talent? Is it better to go pro?
Yeah, you know, I think that's an interesting question. But anytime anyone talks about the college thing, I said, you know, just remember there was a guy named Bill Gates that dropped out of college too.
Right. So. Well, that's what I get.
I think he's done pretty good for himself. Stephen Jobs, the same thing.
So yeah. Zuckerberg is another one. The small names.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's not a good. It's interesting because I think that education itself has to change because we have so much access to to help. We have specific coaches now.
Yeah.
So when you started coaching,
it wasn't that way.
I mean, there was the Plum Brothers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right, but now, you can get like a center coach at 15.
Yeah, you can. And I think everything has been so specialized, and I think that's the way it has happened. And I think the thing that have changed everything about the business world, including the sports world, is the analytics part of it. You know, you can take analytics right now, and you can break it down to the tiniest of things. You know, why can't a guy drive with his right hand? How good is he driving with his right hand? And you know, does he shoot better from the left side of the floor or the right side of the floor? Does he shoot better off the dribble, or is he a catch and shoot guy? All of those things, you know, you can find the answer to in less than 10 minutes. And so you can really take a workout, and you can take that workout, and you can gear it to exactly anything that a player would need to work on. And it's become that specialized now, just like the business world, of course. You know, the marketing part of it becomes very important. And for a player, from a skill standpoint, you know, especially now that I think, you know, some of the things are going to change, and we're probably not that far away from going back to the high school player. So you're going to have a situation where you can have something to judge those guys by. And rather than just be able to see it, you're going to have to read it. And I think this is one of the things that's going to change, you know, obviously our league again.
But as a coach, there's this variable, and I would call it, thank goodness for this variable, because I was blessed to play football in college with this great physique. but there is an emotional intelligence. There's a hidden something that, as a coach, the really good coach are able to find on paper and in the analysis. It doesn't make any sense, but this kid's a winner.
It happens all the time. And anytime they ask me that, I use PJ Tucker from Houston. I had the honor of coaching him when he was at Phoenix. And he's a guy that if you break down his skill level individually, it may not be on the level that it is of what he is as an actual player in this league, because he is a winner. He's a winner, and he does it night in and night out, and he guards the best guy. So I do think that in some ways you can use analytics up to a certain point. But, you know, as a coach, I can look in a guy's eye on the bench, and I know if he wants that ball in the last 5 seconds or not. And regardless of what the analytics say, I think you have to also human nature and just the experience of coaching has to come into play sometime where you go, I don't think he won it tonight, I'm going to go to this guy.
Yeah,
and it may be your supposedly best player on that given night, but I think that's where the human part of coaching comes in, where you've got to go, I don't see it tonight, I'm going to make a judgment call, and I'm going to go to him.
You can see it in that belief in their eyes, right?
Exactly.
I go with confidence all day long.
Yes.
Biggest compliment I got in college was the head coach went down to film and said, he's too small, he's too slow, look at the wrong footwork, and the defensive back coach said, yeah, but he always makes the plays.
And
he goes, that's why he's starting. And there's, on paper, I'm the worst football player you'd ever want to recruit. Last question, you know, being a coach is really being a mentor. And you have to be an expert in relationships and communication. You have to have that trust, like honesty. What advice, though, would you give to mentors out there? Because, you know, these kids are getting younger. I was with Zubats and Shea Alexander with the Clippers, and I'm thinking, extraordinary talent, but they're still like 17 or 18.
Unbelievable.
What advice would you give to, how do you motivate?
As a mentor, you know, you should pay a lot closer attention in those psychology courses now when you're in school. but I do think that you have to have a real relationship. And by that I mean, as I said earlier, he has to believe that you have his best interests, and you have to sell him on the point that not only do you care that he can drive it to the basket and make a left or right hand layup, but he has to understand that you care about him more as a basketball player. And I always have my door open, and guys can come in at any time and say, I disagree with what you're doing. You're not playing me enough minutes, and this is why. This is why I think I should be playing. I always tell them that if you're going to come in and talk, if you're going to make a statement, you got to have something to back it up with. And if they do that, then I can sit down and I explain to them why they're not playing. Or, you know, I always tell guys at some stage during the season, and this is pretty true, almost any guy would tell you this in the NBA, you're going to get an opportunity to play. Now, are you going to take advantage of that opportunity when the time comes? And if you don't, then to me, I never want anyone to leave my office not thinking that they always have a chance. And to me, if you do that, where guys always feel like, okay, if I just get better in this area, I'm going to have an opportunity to play. And they always leave in a positive way, I think, and that's the most important thing.
Yeah, and I think that's where luck is derived. And the same thing in entrepreneurship. Yeah. You got to be ready because you never know when that one opportunity is going to come to prove that you have the skills, the knowledge, and the desire to execute. Because a lot of times we can't see it, but as long as you have that opportunity. And I certainly enjoyed the opportunity to speak with you.
Yeah, I do too.
I've learned a lot. You are
preparation
a coach,
man. Preparation meets opportunity, okay?
There you go. Well, 2019, I wish you all the best.
All right, I appreciate that.
Keep
thanks.
Keep up the good work, and wherever you go, I'll be a big follower. So.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. All Dave Meltzer, Alvin Gentry, here with Entrepreneurs, The Playbook.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of The Playbook as much as me. On a personal note, I just wanted to thank everyone for making The Playbook such a success. Don't forget to continue it by sharing, subscribing, and listening to your favorite episodes. This is Dave Meltzer with The Playbook.